G'day, I'm Mac, and welcome to ECPOD episode 458, the third and final part of my coverage of New Media Expo in 2014. It was a really great opportunity to meet some new faces, meet some people who I've only heard before, and discover a whole lot of new podcasts, some new techniques, and it really, really set the scene for the rest of the trip, and it was an awesome weekend. Of course, there's only so much of it that I can cover on the podcast. There are some elements of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and I wasn't recording 24 hours a day. That said, this is the final part of the New Media Expo coverage. If you haven't heard episodes 456 and 457 yet, you can do that via the ERKPod section of channelerk.com. Listen to those sections as well. This is day three of New Media Expo 2014. I really enjoyed it, and I hope that you are enjoying my coverage as well. On the next episode, we'll get back into tourist mode, or should I say, traveler mode. This is New Media Expo, ERKPod style, part three.
Welcome to day three, the final day of New Media Expo, coming to you from Vegas here at the Rio Hotel and Suites. I am just waiting for the keynote to start, where I'm waiting to hear if Leo Laporte thinks that podcasting is dead this week. There's a reasonably full room considering that it is 9 a.m. on a Monday morning at the conference. Been a big couple of days, and today is going to be huge as well, even though some people have probably left for home. Good news this morning, I have Wi-Fi on both the iPhone and the iPad straight away. I don't know if that's because I'm in the keynote room or not. I'm in the front row, right to the side, just waiting for things to begin. And it is going to be very, very interesting to hear what three people think about the future of podcasting. What do I think about the future of podcasting? Based on the room here, the future of podcasting is strong. It is really great to see another great community of people. And I think that over the coming days, people will reflect back on this conference and they'll think what a great time they've had. Meeting people from all over the world. Yes, all over the world. One thing that I did discover is that it doesn't necessarily matter what you're doing. If you're here, there's lots of friendly people. You know, sometimes you don't get to have a long conversation, but that's fine. I'm used to that when it comes down to being at music shows. You know, you can't expect to totally monopolise someone's time. So you have lots of little connections, and then it's up to you to follow up as things go on. And having something like Twitter has been really, really handy during this conference. There's been lots of different conversations that have been going on Twitter. People have been using it to organise meetups. They've been using it to promote their sessions and to promote themselves, and also to answer questions as well. One thing that I discovered is that it is very difficult to participate in a live session if you actually don't have Wi-Fi. There's lots of things I could have been saying, but I'm like, oh no, I've got no Wi-Fi. And I know yesterday, Ian from Canada, when I eventually got Wi-Fi on the iPad, he says, I haven't heard from you, you've been very quiet, and it's time for me to be quiet because the keynote is about to begin.
Put up more on the team. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rick Calvert.
Good morning, everybody. Who's still sleepy? I am. One more day. Unless you're staying for the Web TV Awards, two more days. One more late night. Anybody come to the podcast awards last night? Did David H. Lawrence, 17th, do an amazing job? Oh, wow.
Monthly right now on the 200 podcasts, it's in excess of 100 million downloads. So monthly. Now the question is, what is the download really? But everybody measures differently. I mean, if you go to SoundCloud, they don't measure downloads per se. They measure something else. And then if you go to a variety of different mediums, they measure in different ways. But what you have to remember is all of these measurements are estimates, okay? Whether it's Nielsen or it was Arbitron before it, whether it's traditional radio, whether it's traditional television, network radio, network television, there, and also a lot of the digital. I mean, it's as credible as the company that is putting out the numbers. You know, if Google puts out a number, people believe it. You know, if Joe Schmo puts out a number, you know, a buyer's going to want to see, you know, more stuff to back it up. But the one thing that we know, that all three of us know, is that direct response advertisers love podcasting. And they love podcasting because it generates leads and acquisition for their products. They can measure the effectiveness of a single announcement, of a single spot in all of the programs that they purchase. And that message, along with metrics that give comfort to advertising agencies, has to be the nature of the presentation that you take forward to the big advertisers to say you're crazy not to do this.
Is it ever going to coalesce, though, into a single system that everybody knows and trusts as it is in television and radio?
Yeah, as long as people understand that they're audience estimates.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're working on that right now. We're working on that with Edison Research. You know, I worked with that back when I was in the U.S. Broadcasting Board of Governors. I was appointed by President Clinton and reappointed by Bush. So I must have been doing something right, because those two guys don't usually get paid a lot of things. But when I was doing broadcasting in the Middle East, setting up Middle East broadcasting in Arabic, of all things, you know, I brought Edison Research in and Nielsen to do market research in all, you know, 22 countries of the Middle East. And they were able to put together credible ratings information there. And if we can do it in 22 countries of the Middle East in Arabic, we ought to be able to figure out how to do it here.
What is the response of advertisers today to podcasts? No, when you go out and pitch Stitcher, what kind of response are you getting?
We are, so we pitch it, we go in a different door than podcast one. We go in the digital door right now, and so we are, we're mobile, and advertisers are looking for things that are safe and mobile, because this is the, you know, we're still in sort of the wild frontier from a mobile perspective. And we're internet radio, so we're competing with the Pandoras of the world. They are very enthusiastic about the fact that, one, it's Stitcher's brand safe and aligned with really strong brands, and two, that there are things you can do on the spoken word side in terms of audience targeting based on what we know the listener is listening to, based on what their interests are.
So you actually are tuning what ads are being played?
Yes, we can. I mean, we need, we're nowhere near Pandora's size, So the more size we have, obviously, the more that we can target. But that's resonating with them. And then the third thing, as we all know and as terrestrial radio knows, is relative to music, spoken word is a much more lean forward experience. The listener is not only heavily engaged in what they're listening to, they're generally doing, you know, they're doing something else and their mind is totally free to listen. It's not like music, it's sort of playing in the background. They also connect deeply with the hosts, and the more long tail the content, the more they connect with the hosts. And one of the reasons that the DR side has been so effective so far is because a host that you love, that you follow, that
sort of forced into it. I mean, there aren't very many comedians that are working today that haven't been screwed by a club owner at one time or another. And so, you know, they got into it not so much to make money, they got into it initially to promote their club dates, merchandising, all kinds of things. Then all of a sudden,
it was part of their marketing endeavor.
Exactly.
Now it's a revenue source.
Now it's a revenue source. And you know,
in fact, Mark Maron, who's a very successful podcaster,
right,
really has made a career now as a TV show based on podcasting.
Absolutely. And you're going to see more and more of that. You know, one of the things that we're thinking about doing is we're thinking about opening up what we do to a larger group of podcasts, maybe not the ones that are currently delivering big download numbers, but, you know, maybe call it the Podcast One Underground and make it available so that people can come in and sort of sample what's out there and see if it builds organically so that it can move up to the main platform and be saleable to national advertisers.
At its peak, how many shows did Westwood One have?
Oh, God.
Not 200.
No, well, when you consider the fact that Westwood One was the Mutual Broadcasting System, the CBS Radio Network,
or maybe you did
NBC
have,
Radio Network.
You did have 200.
We had 3,000 employees.
Yeah.
You know,
so this is very much like Westwood One with a different delivery system.
Yeah, it's like the Westwood One programming side of the business in its early stages. And the numbers, even the revenue numbers, are almost spot on for the first 3 years of what Westwood One was.
Now, I think a lot of people here probably, I don't know, I've been in the Podcast Expo since the very first one. And it wasn't about money in the first one. It wasn't about money in the second one. It started becoming a little more about money in the third one. I hate to think that podcasting has suddenly become about how can we monetize, how can we make money at this.
You know, a guy said to me one time, a guy that I respect who's in the, who's a lawyer, he says, you know something, Pattis? He was a New York lawyer. He says, you know something, Pattis? When they say it's not about the money, it's about the money. Now look, I mean, I've worked with talent for 30 years, and I know that there are certainly people, you know, especially in the music business when we started out, okay? A lot of people in the music business, especially back in the old album rock days, you know, they weren't going to sell out, they weren't going to do this, they did it because of the love. But just as soon as they get exposed to money, it's amazing what a change takes place in their life. You know, that's the reason why we want to hook ourselves up with creative people who are interested in the product and let them be interested in the product and let us worry about the others.
There you go. Because I think that's why people like me are attracted to podcasting. It's the freedom, the creativity, the chance to do something different and unique. And yeah, I guess if you can make some money while you're doing that,
well,
it's not
it
such
turned
a bad
out to be a good business.
It's not such a bad idea.
But it develops out of passion.
But it has to start as a
passion.
It
starts with passion. But
yeah.
After so much time, you need to eat.
Right.
And it could stay a hobby, or as we're seeing, this is an industry transformation.
But it does feel like there is a growing gulf between the hobby podcasters, of which there are thousands, tens of, maybe, well, hundreds of thousands, we know from iTunes, and then people who have decided this is going to be a career in business, and those are it's a much smaller number.
Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't eliminate the hobby podcaster from the marketplace. As a matter of fact, I think it gives the hobby podcaster a possibility that maybe what they're doing could catch on.
Right.
I mean, when you take a look at the viral nature of the business,
you never know.
Really predict
that's
what
right.
People are going to go out and find interesting.
You never know.
And that's that's the great thing about and why we put so much emphasis on the recommendation engine and on the rankings is that
discovery is so important.
Discovery, it gives shows the opportunity to actually be found and for them to thrive on their own merit.
Do you think a good show will be discovered?
Absolutely. If we're doing our job, a good show will be delivered. Will be discovered.
And that happens kind of in a snowball effect. Gradually, you accumulate listeners, and more listeners, they tell other listeners. Is that how it
There's that, and then there's mechanisms for Stitcher anyway. There are mechanisms within the platform.
You like this, so you might like that.
You like this, so you might like that. We also have fastest trending shows, and so if a show catches on, we help it to gather momentum.
Do you find or with advertisers that there are some shows, even if there is an audience for that show?
But
NPR gets advertising.
Sure, absolutely. NPR gets NPR can get a whole lot more advertising, but NPR is very restrictive about the advertising that they will accept. But I think the answer to that question is yes, there are advertisers out there that recognize the value of news and especially the kind of news that exists now. You just gotta find them.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Brock Warner, Podcast Cowboy. Just got my first episode up on Stitcher.
Congratulations, Brock.
The last couple questions already sort of answered my question about advertising over trying to get a premium subscription on your website, I guess. However, I didn't want to sit back down, so I just wanted to discuss appreciation. I had a satellite radio in college, and I didn't have a south-facing apartment, so I had the satellite, and I had to, so it was a pain in the ass all the time. Cat would knock it down to the windowsill and everything. And then I went to my iPod, and that was a pain in the ass waking up, getting all of my podcasts ready for the day. Stitcher Radio, I love it. It's the best, and thanks a lot for creating it.
Thank you.
G'day, I'm Erk from Sydney, Australia, channel.com. Hi, over here, the other microphone. Hi. Question for Leo. I know it was some time ago, but you did make the statement about podcasting is dead. Do you regret that comment, and what has changed since that comment?
I was, at the second or third podcast expo. And what I meant was to think that we should not think of ourselves as, I don't know what I meant, as hobbyists, that really we are creating content on the internet. And so it's a mistake to, I felt like it was demeaning to say we're podcasters. We are creating shows on the internet. Podcast One, you're using the name podcast. Stitcher does not use the name podcast. I didn't want us to be a niche. I don't think we're a niche. I think we're the world.
I'm not using the name podcast so much because I think it's going to resonate with consumers. As a matter of fact, it may be actually not beneficial within the financial community to use the word podcast, because in the financial community, they think of podcasts as being something that was tried and failed.
Yes.
But since I don't need the financial community, I don't care what they think. I'm more interested in establishing the relationship with advertisers, and not enough of them ever tried podcasting to have formed an opinion that it worked or that it didn't work. They just never used it.
Right.
And now all of the data is showing that there's that podcasts are being consumed by more and more people, that the mobile applications of podcasting are becoming wider and wider and wider. And I wanted to be able to tell the story of Westwood One to Podcast One, because I thought that would get me into a lot of doors that a lot of other people couldn't get into. And so far, so good.
Noah, do you ever use the word podcast as Stitcher?
We have very mixed feelings about the P word. The reason when we don't, and the reason that we don't, is because it's probably the same reason that you said podcasting is dead. But we do not. We're the future of radio.
Yeah.
We're on-demand internet radio. That's what we are. A lot of podcasters use the word podcast, so we're kind of doing a balancing act. We would love it if we went away from that word.
It's what everybody's the word everybody uses, yeah. So I've got to acknowledge it. To me, it's like blogging. There's this perception blogging is dead, but there's more blogs than ever before. It is a vital medium. What it is writing on the internet. What we're doing is audio and video content on the internet. So why give us this?
G'day, I'm Eric, and I'm here with Leah Laporte, the owner of Tech of Twit TV. G'day, Leah.
Hey, Eric, how are you?
Good. How's your new Media Expo been?
Well, we just got here this morning, but it's been so good so far. I think we won an award last night. That's good.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
Now, I've just seen your keynote, The Future of Podcasting, and I did ask you the question about the statement that you made years ago. You're probably sick of the question, but when did you say the podcasting is dead? When was that, for some sort of context?
I think it was probably the second or third podcast expo. This is modified, transmogrified into New Media Expo.
Yep.
But even, you notice, even in New Media Expo, they don't want to use the word podcast. And part of the problem I had was the word podcast itself. It implies that you're listening to something on an iPod. You synced it up to iTunes. And we're really much more, what's happening, this revolution is much more than that. It's about new media. It's about putting, the same kind of, I think, quality content that you hear on radio and television on the internet instead. And giving people who create content, the control, the ability to do it. So podcasting to me seems, the idea of podcasting seems to be very limiting. And I think when I gave that speech, frankly, podcasting was kind of struggling.
So what year was that?
I'm going to guess it was 2009, something like that.
So what's changed between 2009 and 2014?
Well, nothing really. I don't call myself a podcaster. I think what we are is we're doing content for the internet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that we are... To say you're a podcaster, to me, feels like you're saying you're something less than a professional broadcaster. You're not.
Yep.
You're a broadcaster. It's just you're doing it over the internet instead of over the airwaves of the cable. So, and then I also told you, as you remember, that it also was link bait. I was just trying to get people to come to my talk.
And it certainly worked. And, you said that in 2009, and I still remember that. And that's why I thought, I want to ask you the question, and I have.
It never died. It's not dead. It's a revolution in broadcasts. It's a revolution in content. But it's so much more than podcasting.
So what's
what I do? I stream video. You download video, but you can also watch streaming live video. You go to our website. You can watch it on a Roku. What is that? Is that a podcast? If you're watching it on a Roku, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. It's internet broadcasting.
Excellent. So we're in Vegas. I've been asking all of my interviewees, what's one tip that you could give someone about Vegas if they're like first time, never been here?
It's very dry here, so get a humidifier, bring it with you, and drink a lot. And I don't care what you drink, but drink a lot.
I read someone from Florida was saying that they didn't understand why lip balm is in almost every store, but they do now.
It's very dry. We're in the desert.
Yep.
It's easy to forget we're in the desert. And so every time I come here, I get Vegas throat, a very dry throat. So I make sure I have a humidifier and lots of liquids.
Because I'm from Australia, and so it's the Australian summer at the moment. And
right.
So we're here in Vegas, and it's not too bad. But, of course, there's lots of people from the northeast who couldn't get in. So I'm a little bit – I'm thinking, blizzards? No. Where? I haven't seen any.
No. Yeah. No, this is – it's cold here at night, though. It's a desert, so it gets almost down to freezing. Vegas is crazy, and when you come to Vegas during a big trade show like CES in 2 days, are you going to stay for CES?
I'll be here for part of it.
It's insane. You can't get around. You just allow hours to get from one place to the other. It just gets crazy. We're going to leave tonight. I don't want to be here for a CES. I'm getting out of here.
Excellent, Leo. It's been a lot of fun. Eric. I never thought that I'd be able to actually have this opportunity, and that's probably one of the great things about podcasting compared to like radio and stuff. Thanks,
it's
mate.
It's a democracy.
Excellent.
Love it.
Thank you.
Take care, Eric.
Coming to you from outside the New Media Expo, New Media Lounge, here on day 3 of New Media Expo. I'm just a little bit excited. I just interviewed Leo Laporte. As you may have heard in the previous segment, I asked the man about his statement about is podcasting dead, and you heard his answer. Many, many years ago, when I was first getting into podcasting in 2007, there would have been no way that I would have had the nerve to ask that question. When I was standing in the line to actually ask the question during the Q&A, there were butterflies, which I haven't had for some time, but I thought this could be a defining moment in my podcasting career. It could be. I don't know why, but it could be. There was two lines, because there was two microphones, and there was about five or six people at one microphone, and there was a microphone that was empty. No one in the line. So I went straight for that empty microphone. And people kept on using the other microphone because that microphone was right in the panelist's line of sight. So eventually I thought, they're not going to look over here. As soon as the person takes a couple of steps to get in front of the microphone, I thought, that's when I've got to pounce and I have to say, "G'day, I'm Eric, and from Sydney, Australia." And that's exactly what I did. And the panelists were looking straight towards the other microphone, and then they were looking to their right, and I was to their left, and so I'm waving, "Over here, guys," at the other microphone. And so I asked the question, which was awesome, and then I asked Leo if I could record the one-on-one that we had in the previous segment. He said he was totally fine with that, and that's what I like about this media. I can go up, you know, I've been here for a while. I've been here since 2007. I've got 450 plus episodes of Eric Pod up, plus all the music shows. I feel now that I can go up to people such as Gramagor, the award-winning Gramagor. I can go up to people like Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast interviewer, and I can be in the same room with him and ask him a question. I can ask a question. I can have a one-on-one with Leo Laporte, and try doing that with somebody in radio or TV, and to a lesser extent when it comes to music. You would have your people speaking to their people. You would have Elsie from Libsyn just wave at me as she passes by, which was rather nice. You would have to speak to their people. You probably wouldn't even get the chance to speak to their people. But at a conference like this, it doesn't matter if you've done 450 podcasts or you haven't even started yet. You can go up to someone such as Cliff, such as Leo, and say, "Hey, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. What should I do?" Or you can say to them, "Yeah, I'm having trouble getting feedback from listeners." And many podcasters know that that is a difficult thing to do, getting feedback from listeners. There were some points in the keynote about monetizing podcasts and advertising for podcasts, surprise, surprise, and also the hobbyist podcast. I see myself as somewhere in between. My day job, which is totally unrelated to podcasting, gives me enough to be able to be here. Like, I'm on 2 months leave that I'm getting paid for, and I'm getting paid to be here with a room full of people that I like. This isn't a hobby, this is a serious business, and it's a serious commitment, even though I'm not really making any money from it, and that is totally fine. Because what price could you pay? What price could you charge? What price could you receive from the experiences that you have, such as this, and such as interacting with your listeners and taking people down the strip at Vegas, for instance. You know, the Twitter conversations, the Facebook conversations, the various chats, having someone wave at you as you're recording and you wave back and now they know who you are. You can tell that I'm happy, and yeah, I'm happy. Lots more to come. I'm here with Jeff from BBM, and he's going to tell me exactly what BBM is, because I've got absolutely no idea. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
How's New Media Expo for you?
Oh, it's been great so far. I mean, we're here from BlackBerry talking about our app BBM, which is an instant messenger app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. Some people might know it as BlackBerry Messenger, but it's not just for BlackBerry smartphones anymore. BBM is an app that allows you to chat, share, send photos, files, documents, and more between contacts on iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry.
Yep.
One of the things that we're kind of debuting here at New Media Expo is a new feature called BBM Channels. And what BBM Channels do is give you as a content publisher an opportunity to have essentially a branded inbox on 80 million mobile devices, iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. So when you publish to your channel, you essentially send your content onto the mobile device of the people who subscribe to your channel, and they would get an alert, just like a text message or an iMessage message, for example, alerting them that you've published new content.
Okay, so I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I've got a podcast, we're recording this on Audio Boo at the moment. So can I get those people to come over to BBM, and can I share, like, say this Audio Boo message or a photo? Like, if I share it in Twitter, can I share it on BBM as well? How does that interchange?
It's a great question. So we are working on that, right? BBM Channels is in its infancy right now, so we don't have that cross-posting available, but it will be available very soon. We have a desktop management console that allows you to manage your BBM channel from your computer, and we'll be building that out to allow you to manage multiple social media or social networks from that one console.
So what's an advantage that you guys have got that other people don't have, the names that people know?
Sure. So BBM is an instant messenger, has a number of advantages compared to, say, like WhatsApp or iMessage. The first is that you get delivery and read notifications. So when somebody actually views your message, you'll be informed that they've seen your message. Many of the other platforms out there, whether it's SMS or WhatsApp, don't give you that assurance that your message has been delivered and been read. Another key thing about BBM is that it offers more privacy. So it's not based off a phone number or an email address.
Yep.
So when you, say, meet a new acquaintance, you don't need to give them your personal info to get hooked up on this IM app. Now, as far as BBM channels go, there are some differentiators compared to, say, Twitter or Facebook, right? Twitter is a great way to broadcast at an audience, right? But it's a one-way communication.
Like what we got here at MNX, unless someone replies to you.
That's right. Whereas a BBM channel is like a small community based around your post. So if you post, say, about a topic that you just saw here at NMX, and you put a photo in, and you put, you know, up to 4,000 characters of text, anybody who subscribes to your channel can now start engaging and responding with that content in a little bit of a forum built around that post. So it's a much more community-driven type of engagement as opposed to like a Twitter where it's a one-way broadcast.
So you need Wi-Fi or you need phones, a data service to use it. Is it going to be global?
That's right. BBM is a global product right now. We've got 80 million users using BBM, 40 million new users in the last 60 days. So it's growing really quickly, and we're launching some new features in the coming weeks that'll take it another step further.
How can we find you online? How can we get the app?
You can get the app by going to bbm.com from your Android or iPhone. Just go to your browser, whether it's Chrome or Safari on your mobile device, type in bbm.com and we'll take you right to the app in the App Store. It's a free app to download, and there's no kind of subscription or charge to use the app.
Quick question to finish. You're in Vegas. What would you give as a tip for someone visiting Vegas for the first time?
I would give them the tip to wear comfortable shoes because there's a lot of walking. And I'll tell you one thing. While places might look close on the Strip, they're a lot further than they appear to be. The Strip is curved. And so while everything might look close, it's actually a further walk than it might seem.
Jeff, thanks, man. It's been fun.
You're very welcome.
So, cool. That I'll save that. I'm here at New Media Expo at the Loopson booth with Elsie. Hello.
Hello. How is everybody today?
Good. How are you, more importantly?
I'm doing fantastic.
Now, I was in your session yesterday, the Women in Podcasting with Grammar Girl, and that was basically my introduction to you.
Oh.
And then I saw you at dinner last night. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're actually doing in the podcast space, because it sounds like you're a very busy lady.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I started podcasting in July 2006 as a yoga podcaster. I started doing a yoga podcast and just podcasting my classes. Soon after that, I started working for Libsyn, which is the largest podcast host and distribution network.
Ding.
And, ding, I know, eh? And then I have recently started to produce the Feed, which is the official Libsyn podcast, and it's a podcast about podcasting, basically, and really as a kind of like a, how it is, a liaison between our users and the system and the podcasting space, and we do all kinds of analysis and reporting on news and things like that, as well as tips.
So tell me a little bit about the yoga podcast.
Okay, the yoga podcast is basically just me teaching a class, and I just record the class, and then I podcast it. You know, I put it out on a feed, and people can do it wherever it is that they live in the world.
So it's audio?
It's audio, yeah. Most of them are all audio. I only have two video podcasts, video podcast episodes. The rest of them are all, it's all, now I have over 100 free audio classes of yoga that you can do wherever you are.
Now, I'm not the biggest yoga expert, but even I know it's visual. So if you're trying to teach me something, how do you do it in audio?
Because I'm really good at what I do. Oh my God, I'm a great teacher. No, you know, part of it is that I do. I'm very specific with my words and how I'm doing. And I also have a component on the web where it's like I have the poses there,
yeah.
So that you can kind of go to the blog post and you can see the poses there. And you can kind of go like, oh, that's kind of what she saw. Oh, that's the shape that my body's supposed to be in. And you can follow along.
So do you have like a set routine?
No. It's always different.
Yeah.
You never know what I'm going to be teaching.
Okay. And you were telling us during the session yesterday that people have been inspired. People have been yogering, is that the right term?
Yes.
Yogering with you for years,
yes.
And you've never met them.
No, I haven't. And I actually have had some people meet me. They've come to Pittsburgh and they've met me there, that they've been practicing with me for a while. And they do reach out to me for years. There's people who have started practicing with me and become yoga teachers themselves,
okay, so
because of me,
which
is kind of crazy pants.
Wow. So, New Media Expo, very busy for you.
Very busy. All the people everywhere, all the time. Fun.
Fun. So last night was the podcast awards. You were nominated.
Yes, I was. I was nominated. Yay.
And there were lots of cheers as well.
And there were lots of cheers. I know, that was so fun. I was like very excited by that.
So what does this event mean for you personally and also for Libsyn?
For me personally, this is where I got into the podcasting space. I came to the second, I think. It was actually the podcast expo at that time, the first time that I came. It was in Ontario, California. And it's sort of like I got to know people, I stepped into what people were doing, and it kind of changed my life.
Yeah.
And in terms of Libsyn, this is where all our users are. You know, this is where we come to connect with everybody that works with us and is with us. So it's the best show to come to, I think.
Now, we're in Vegas.
Yes.
And I've been asking everyone, if you had to give one tip or suggestion for a Vegas newbie, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. Buy your own water.
Buy your own water?
Yes. Go to a drugstore and buy like a bucket of gallon of water and have that in your room.
No, I use my camera.
Now, this is the funny thing about languages and things like that. You said a drugstore. Because I'm traveled, I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, all right.
But
a convenience store.
We'd call it a chemist or a pharmacy, possibly.
Ah, really? It's just, or even a, how about a supermarket?
A supermarket.
Yeah. Oh, anywhere that it's not in the hotel.
Because I think of something like a Walgreens or a CVS, and we'd call it basically a chemist or a pharmacy.
A chemist. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Because the person, like the person who gives you the pills, they're either a chemist or they're a pharmacist.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So there you go. You've learned something.
I have.
How can we find you?
Oh, you can come. Just you can follow me. I'm at YoGeek almost everywhere, and you can just check me out at lcescobar.com, or you can come over to blog.
Most important on the underground, can you turn your flash off when you use the camera? And next time, if you're going to take a photograph, can you ensure that I'm smiling, please?
Here at New Media Expo, and I'm here with Chris from Amateur Traveller. G'day, Chris, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
How's New Media Expo been for you? I was actually in one of your sessions yesterday afternoon.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. It's been good. I love the networking, especially. I love running into new people like you that I don't know. And then I've been coming to the podcast in Portable Media Expo since 2005, so running into people that I have known forever. So it's a fun combination of the two.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about Amateur Traveller, and you also do This Week in Travel.
That's correct, yes. So This Week in Travel is the smaller show. It's a roundtable, four-person discussion of topics in travel, and it might be that we have an author talking about their latest book. We often do some travel news, so we have travel editors and bloggers and such come on. Amateur Traveler is a weekly show. It's the larger of the two, and it talks every week about a different travel destination that you should consider going to. And so what I say is that we talk about everything from when you go to Chicago in the Illinois of the United States, a little context there, what should you get on your Chicago dog, to going to Tonga and swimming with whales.
Awesome. So this has been really strange for me because I'm in the middle of the Australian summer. I've flown basically straight to Vegas via LA, and yet there's a whole heap of people who couldn't be here
because
of blizzards.
Snow, right, exactly.
And I'm like, what snow? What blizzard? Although I did get caught in Nemo last year in New York, so.
Right. Yeah.
So when it comes to travel, there's no shortage of material to talk about for either show.
There is no shortage of material to talk about. Yeah, usually for This Week in Travel, some airline is creating content for us every week by doing something stupid or something, you know, fabulous is going on. So that's always interesting content. And then we have lots of destinations we haven't talked about yet. But
so for the destinations that you, it's with Amateur Traveler, it's destinations that you've been to or have other people contributed as well?
Well, occasionally we'll talk about places that I have been, but it is primarily an interview show. And so we're talking to people who are in that destination, listened to the show and traveled to that destination, wrote the guidebook on that destination. It's a variety of guests on, but it's usually somebody who, you know, really loved that destination and wants to basically tell you why you might love it too. And of course, you might not. You may listen to the show and decide that is not the destination for you. You don't want to go on a pony trek in Lesotho. Or you may decide that, I've even found for me, it has put things on my travel map.
I know that there's a stereotype from outside America that says that Americans in general don't like to travel outside the borders. Now,
right.
You're obviously not one of those guys.
A lot of America is a stereotype, but it's also true. A lot of Americans don't have a passport, don't travel outside the border. I think the number right now that we believe is true is something like 3% of Americans will travel outside of the border in any given year.
Yes. 3%? I didn't think. I knew it was low, but I didn't think it was that low.
Well, the numbers are not quite known. We know what percentage of trips there are, and it's just a question of how that is distributed. But I am not one of those. That is correct.
We're here,
and I have been to Australia.
My next question. Have you been to Australia? What do you think?
I've been to Australia. I went to Australia to visit family. I had an uncle who settled in Australia and actually who irrigated a lot of the cotton country in Australia and put that under irrigation. And so we went there to see him, fortunately, before he died.
Yep.
So we went to Cairns and Sydney, and then the odd places in between, like Narrabri.
Narrabri. Yeah, there's one that some listeners won't know.
Doesn't get a lot of tourism, but the Cotton Museum there is one of the best cotton museums I have ever been to, I have to say.
Finally, mate, we're in Vegas. For that someone who hasn't been to Vegas, what would be a first-time travel tip that you'd give them?
Run away, run as fast as you can.
Run like the wind.
Well, it depends what you like to do in Vegas. Obviously, the biggest things that it's known for are the gambling, the shows, and nowadays also the restaurants. It's not cheap like it used to be, but the quality of the restaurants are better. The shows are better, much better than they used to be 10, 20 years ago. If you're looking for something a little more unusual, two places that I would recommend are, actually, there's three now. Two would be the Mob Museum. Just talked to people who just got back from there, thoroughly enjoyed it, spent 3 hours there, talking about the mob origins of Vegas. The Neon Boneyard, where a lot of the old signs from things still are.
Wow.
And then also they've just opened up a new mall that's made entirely out of shipping containers, kind of like the one in Christchurch that they did after the earthquake there.
All right, I'm going to have to... Because I know for me, New Media Expo at the moment is the only reason, or is the main reason, that I'm in Vegas at this time of year.
Me too.
So there's always somewhere where you can go and something that you can do, even if you don't like gambling.
Oh, yeah.
Where would be your favorite travel destination that you've been to and one that you haven't been to that's on your list?
Well, certainly any place in Australia that I haven't been to, you know, it's got to be high on the list, and there are places there. But where I have been, I would probably have to say Egypt.
Egypt.
I'm a huge history buff, and going to some place where they built pyramids before they had the wheel is just pretty darn amazing. Tanzania, Istanbul up there, but Egypt just was magnificent. Where to next, though? I would love to get to Israel.
Yeah.
That's probably where Israel and Jordan are probably way high on my list.
There is actually a lady around here somewhere from Brazil. I don't know if you've bumped into her yet.
Yes, at least one person I've run into from Brazil. So.
Awesome. So if there was somewhere in America that you would say that I definitely had to go to, I know you don't know anything about my preferences or anything.
Well, yeah. So if you like cities, New York, if you like nature, you're close to some of the most beautiful spots on the planet. Zion National Park,
yep.
A short drive from here, Bryce National Park. Also a short drive, and then a much more unusual pick, the Antelope Canyon Navajo Nation National Park in Page, Arizona, is a slot canyon you can descend down into that, if you've ever seen pictures of slot canyons in the American Southwest, they were taken at that canyon. There's two parts of the canyon, but they were taken there.
So how can we find you online and connect with you wherever you happen to be traveling?
You can find me at amateurtraveler.com.
And Twitter?
At Chris2X.
Awesome, Chris. It's been a lot of fun. Safe travels, mate. You have to travel back somewhere after this?
I'm actually off to Boston if I can get through the snow for work. I consult for TripAdvisor.
I know there's a lot of people who have been having trip problems getting out of here.
I'm doing a session this afternoon for somebody who couldn't make it in because of snow. So.
As I said, mate, strange concept. Great to see you. I'm going to have to listen to some more episodes as I'm traveling around as well.
Excellent.
Thanks, mate. It's been a lot of fun.
Good to meet you.
Knows that when you audition for it, they made up sides. Did sides, they? For those of you that are actors, are like two or three pages of scripts that they give you for an audition so that you can do a short piece of the scene and maybe get booked, right?
See, I'm not an actor. I assume that it was a little web series that they did. They
I did do a web series called Nowhere Man, which won a producer's award. That told you what happened to my character between season 3 and season 4.
Right, those were fun to watch.
Yeah. So, but when I went in to do the audition, the sides that they gave me had me sitting in a chair puppeting one woman to kill and dispose of the body of a woman I had just had sex with so that I could then, when she was done, have sex with her. And I'm like, what happened to my heroes? The 9 o'clock show that was in the Safe Harbor area that I could watch safely and not have these kinds of, you know, Law and Order SVU kind of, you know, plots, and then all of a sudden they're, you know,
one woman's dismembering another woman at my pleasure, and it's like, this is what I'm auditioning for? Well, when I auditioned, I watched this one woman that was just off camera, behind the camera, shudder when I was done, and I thought, either she's freezing, or I just creeped her out. Let's hope it was the latter. And that woman was the director of, was the head of casting for NBC, so... That was, it was a good person to make sure. So yes, yeah. I did do that character.
You did it excellent.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I did this for a long time.
Hold barista?
Yeah, hold a cup.
Starbucks.
I did talk shows.
So you were David H. Lawrence's radio. The podcast.
Well, I did podcasts for years and years and years. I mean, I did over 12,000 episodes of a podcast called The Personal Netcast over 14 to 15 years because I had a radio show at the same time. And so, you know, it was pretty easy to just sort of sit in the same seat and use the same equipment and have everything automated by my automation software. If you guys really want to get efficient about your stuff, figure out how to automate it. So that everything you do, the intro music and the effects and whatever you have, is all done for you ahead of time. So all you have to do is talk. And you will find that your production levels and your production values will go up. The number of times that you do it will go up. I just, you know, a lot of the sessions have been about consistency here at NMX and also about persistence and about quantity as well as quality. People giving heft to your brand.
Yes.
So,
as there you go.
So we need to create an app for that.
I have an app for that.
You have an app.
I have an app. I don't know if it's for that. I actually do. I have an app called Rehearsal, which helps actors learn their lines. And it's actually an industry standard. You can go look on YouTube. There's a video where Juliana Margulies, you know Juliana Margulies?
Not
from The Good Wife? But you know who she is.
Yes.
She started going off on how great this app was in the middle of an Emmy actress roundtable. So Claire Danes is sitting at the table, Kira Sedgwick, Emmy Rossum, January Jones from Mad Men. I mean, all these people. And she's like, girls, do you not know about Rehearsal? Because they were all complaining about how many pages of sides they had to learn every day and how the writers were sadistic. Like, they would give you a script at 11:30 at night, and then by 9 o'clock the next morning, they'd completely rewritten it, and all the lines that you'd learned, you'd have to learn all over again. So she uses the app, and so do 50,000 other actors, and I'm really happy about that.
That's awesome. Now, but that is not why you're here today.
No, I'm here today, of course, to drink coffee.
Oh, we love the Starbucks. In fact, two ways to get on the show. Buy Daddy Liquor or Buy Daddy Starbucks. I'm just saying.
Buy Daddy Liquor.
Happens to be a bar.
Right there.
Buy Daddy Liquor.
What does Daddy drink?
That's a great question. That's one of the
Scott,
best
Scott, questions. I take Scott. That's why you did an excellent, excellent job. I don't believe you just filled in for Dr. Drew. I believe you came in and did an amazing job.
Yeah, let's face it. Dr. Drew would have been so lovely. It would have been. It's a good thing that his flight got canceled. And he bailed on us. Because, seriously, stand around, you talk about herpes for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and it gets old. It really does. Trust me. I've been there. It gets old. You know, you're going to talk about ED. You're going to talk about, you know, vaginal warts, whatever. It's like, seriously, after a while, people just, like, tune out. They're like, blah, 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 vaginal
warts. Which they are not doing
it again. More about vaginal warts.
Of course, we're talking about the podcast awards that you lose to.
Right. There's some sort of connection somewhere.
Oh, my God. The gift that keeps on giving.
Your response,
We're here at New Media Expo, and I'm with Janine from Girls in Tech. Hello, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
Good, how's your New Media Expo been?
So far, so good.
So is today your first day, or have you been here the whole time?
Today is actually my first day here.
But you've already had one interview today, so that's okay.
Yeah, I'm more popular than I was expecting.
So you're a Vegas local for the moment?
Yes, I've lived here for 3.5 years.
I was talking to you before, and there's a lot of people who are imported from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Where are you imported from?
I'm originally from North Carolina.
And what brought you to Vegas in the first place?
It's a job.
A job?
Yeah. So, I believe I was explaining earlier that, initially that wasn't really why I moved, but we'll chop. I'm not sure why I moved here. I think it had something to do with the guy. But once I was here, I realized that almost 80% of the population in Las Vegas has never gone to college. And with my degrees, and my career in tech, it allowed me to actually be much more valuable in Las Vegas than I would have been in a lot of other cities.
I've actually heard that a lot of companies are actually moving here, call centers, service centers, everything like that, because it's cheaper here, yes. Which is hard to believe.
Yeah, actually the no state income tax contributes a great deal to the lower cost of living. And instead, we count on people gambling to pay our taxes for us.
Go back a bit. There's no income tax in Vegas, really?
Yeah, there's no state income tax. So I think when I was in North Carolina, making significantly less money, I think maybe $800 a check were gone in taxes versus when I got here. I literally wondered if my employer was not employing me legally. I was like, why is my check so big? So similarly, if you're going to own a company, the United States is one of the few states that, since there's no state income tax, you get to retain a lot more of your income.
Because that's an interesting difference between America and Australia. Mm-hmm. We have a 10% goods and services tax, which you'd call a sales tax, mm-hmm. and then you've got your federal tax, but there's no state income tax mm-hmm. throughout the whole of Australia. What sort of tech industries are you involved with here in Vegas?
So, in the time that I've been at Vegas, I was a user interface artist at Garage Games. And then this last year, I've been the senior user interface and user experience designer at Aristocrat Technologies. They create slot machines.
Yeah.
And more recently, I've taken the plunge of entrepreneurship, and I'm building my own company. So
tell us about Girls in Tech. How did you get involved, and what's involved?
So Girls in Tech, my friend Christina, who's the founder of the Las Vegas chapter, I met her at a Women in Media Mentoring Initiative event, and I told her I work in technology, and particularly game software and mobile apps, websites, etc. And she saw an opportunity to connect me with mentoring young girls
yep.
so that they could have exposure to the tech industry and feel excited about it and want to have more tech-savvy careers.
Yeah. So being a girl in tech, is that an advantage or a disadvantage, or shouldn't I even mention it?
I personally love it. my dad was a senior hardware engineer, and so funny, I went to the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City, and so many of my friends went into the fashion industry versus myself. I went for 3D computer animation and interactive media, and so all my classmates were men, and most of the people I've worked with in my career, well, almost all of the people I have worked with have been men. And I tell all my friends that went into fashion, like, it's the best. I work with like 20 nerds, and all my programmers and developers are the nicest guys, and they're just thrilled to work with me. And our average conversation would be video games or movies or playing foosball, and we do things like, you know, Beer Friday. And it's a fantastic industry. I love it.
Yeah, I'll just stop that just for. So if you're a girl and if you're in tech and you're new to Vegas, and I know you've got other chapters in places other than Vegas, what can you do, or what can girls in tech do for someone like who's in tech, they're a girl, and they're new to wherever they happen to be? What can they do?
So, like I said, there's kind of two things I think that our emphasis is. A, we have a meetup group, Facebook group, and we do a lot of events. I'll certainly pass you one of the event calendars if you're interested while you're here. So we do all the kind of meetup group events, and it's primarily you go network, you meet other people, and it's such a wonderful community where everyone wants to help each other succeed, that you can absolutely connect with other people that would be the right resources for what you want to do. In addition to, like I said, they try to connect women with mentors
yep.
and or young girls with mentors that are already in the industry, so that it can help them to come into the industry and do well.
Because I know from personal experience that there are a lot of girls in tech that you might not necessarily know until you actually get into tech itself, and then you branch out and you network.
Yeah, we're a little, like I said, when you work with almost all men, I mean, I love my coworkers, but it can be a little isolating. So it's really great to be able to go to social networking with events where you meet other women that you can have a conversation with about what you do. And, of course, it's exciting and enjoyable.
What about an event like New Media Expo? What would that sort of be like for you guys? As I know there's a lot of ladies here. I can't put a figure on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say it again.
I can't put a figure on, like, how many women are here, but there are quite a few women and they are all involved in some sort of tech or new media.
Yeah, there's actually been a lot of women that have gone through here today and talked about their place in media. Literally, I think the woman who was here a few moments ago was talking about doing podcasts and so on and so forth. So it's really exciting to hear everyone's story and hope that they will come out to some of our meetup events and meet more people as well.
And even though like you're part of the Vegas chapter,
mm-hmm.
where are some of the other locations that, because there's a lot of people flying into Vegas and then flying out, where are some of the other locations that people can go to?
I know that it was originally founded in Denver, Colorado, and lists several other locations in North America, as well as South America, Asia Pacific, Europe, and Middle East and Africa. So it's a very international organization.
And we're going to have to make some inquiries in relation to Australia.
Yes, absolutely.
Have you been to Australia?
I have not.
Would you like to?
Yes. Actually, a few of my coworkers from Aristocrat. It's an Australian company.
Yes.
So I've worked with a lot of Australians.
Excellent. Now, to me, you're basically a Vegas local.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one tip, or a tip for a Vegas newbie. That's what I've been asking a lot of people. A tip for a Vegas newbie. If you had to tell them one thing about Vegas, what would you tell them?
Let's see. Vegas right now, I think, is literally one of the most exciting cities in the United States. Presently, Downtown Project is working to make downtown Vegas one of the most culturally enlightened and exciting places in the country, which isn't what Vegas is known for.
Yep.
But we're doing an amazing job at creating a culture, and I believe they've been recognized as one of the most successful, decisive projects to actually save the culture and economy of a city here. It's so exciting to live here right now.
So the message is, come to Vegas. There's not just strip clubs and gambling and everything like that.
Yeah, there's literally, we do First Friday once a month, which is an art show. I literally could go to a different art gallery opening almost any day of the week. And it's such a welcoming, creative art, music, culture that you definitely would not be disappointed if you wanted to come find culture here.
So how can we find you online, and how can we find Girls in Tech online?
Actually, my website is janine.com. Spelled just like my name, J-E-H-N-E-A-N. And Girls in Tech is literally girlsintech.org. Additionally, they have a Facebook page, which is Girls in Tech. We have the Girls in Tech Las Vegas chapter, if you'd like to find them there as well.
So. Awesome. It's been fun. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll enjoy my rest of my time in Vegas.
You too. Thanks so much, Eric. Cool.
Hey
friends, let me ask you a question. When is the last time you visited the Association of Music Podcasting's website at musicpodcasting.org? You didn't? What are you missing? Well, here's the deal. Each and every podcaster from the Association of Music Podcasting puts out shows on a regular basis, and you can find listings for all of those shows and all of that great music that you may be missing right there at musicpodcasting.org. We also have a Facebook page, and it lets you know every time we put out a new show. It's at facebook.com/musicpodcasting. Oh, and by the way, we're on Twitter at twitter.com/musicpodcasting.
G'day, I'm Matt from Sydney, Australia. Question for you. Do you have like a ballpark figure between US and non-US podcasts? Why I ask that is, obviously I'm an Australian, but what I want to know is, like, US podcasters, Memorial Weekend, oh, we're going to take the weekend off. Thanksgiving, we're going to take the weekend off. Christmas, New Year, we're going to take the year off. We don't all celebrate the same holidays, and we still want stuff to listen to. So is there some sort of like ballpark figure, US compared to non-US?
I think off the top of my head, this may be 2% of those things. 87% North America, US and Canada, 13% US, I think is what our bottom. I might be wrong. I know the Chinese listening audience is, which is weird, but.
Tom, is that are you talking consumption? Yeah, are you talking to your producers?
We're about 68% US downloads versus the rest of the world, but content producers were actually higher, like 70%.
I might be wrong, but I think that was the number we were seeing for listening.
Yeah, for listening, there's a little bit of change, and for
for us because we mainly have U.S. content. We have some content in different languages, but it's about 85-15 for us from a listening and listeners.
We do have Hamish and Andy too, so
I'm sorry.
Yeah, though I think it's a really good question that you asked just in a broader sense, because I'm seeing on the Windows Phone platform that there's been a big spike in content providers submitting content to me outside of the U.S. So I would say it's actually more significant. There's new content being made outside of the USA, so I think we are seeing in China has recently surged as far as consumption side. So I think we are seeing kind of the birth of the international podcast market that's starting to happen over the last 18 months or so, and I think it will continue to expand. So I think this conference and the whole podcasting space seems to embrace international podcasting more, and I think we will over time.
Testify.
And iTunes has done Apple's done a push in China on iTunes, and, yep. and they have a podcasting person in China, so I think we'll see more and more out of China.
Kirk, can I go back and ask Angelo to pull the exact data on each more acronyms? I'll put it up on the blog post.
Awesome.
So we don't have any disparity. Go ahead.
Hey guys, thanks for question for you. We're kind of embracing the model, especially with Stitcher's doing and iTunes. We'd like to try to attract more people by them going to the what's up. Coming on there, you're right there, and they find us that way. So we try to figure out what's the secret sauce. How do you get to what's up? iTunes, you know, we think we know, but we don't know. It changes all the time. I figured with Noah here, maybe I could ask him.
It's an algorithm, so similar to Google and iTunes, if I told you guys all the special sauce.
Send Rachel and give a basket.
Yes. it's based on, the more that you use your existing audience to promote the Stitcher platform, the faster you will move up in the ranks, and it can be through all forms of a big, you know, if you have a big Twitter following or a big Facebook following, that will help significantly. And then we have, but we're constantly improving the algorithm. Do you want to start that? And that's what we want. We want people to be listening to shows based on their interests that they have not heard of before. And our recommendation algorithm is getting significantly better at that. And I'm sorry I can't give you an exact algorithm.
Plus gift basket.
He's pretty good at it.
Yeah, I know. And one more question is, until I got hit.
This morning, day 3 of New Media Expo 2014, we started off with the keynote speech about the future of podcasting. Today, at the end, we heard about the state of podcasting, and that session was rather cool because we had the head of Blueberry, we had the head of Libsyn, we had the head of Stitcher, and some of the stats were very, very interesting indeed. Audio is still king. Video is increasing. The use of mobile devices and mobile apps is increasing. But if you've got a video podcast, the most popular place for that is YouTube. But then again, there were some comments there that YouTube isn't necessarily good for long-form video. Speaking of long-form podcasts, on Libsyn, for the most popular shows with over 100,000 downloads, long-form podcasting is doing very, very well with many, 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 many listeners listening to longer shows. Something like 65% of those shows are over 50 minutes long. And there's at least one guy who's podcasting and putting out four-hour episodes. That's right, Captain Jeff, I said four-hour episodes. So you and I are looking pretty good. Stitcher Radio has been improving their market share. There's lots of stats that were in the presentation.
but they've got double the shows that they had in 2012. They'll have something like 4 million cars that are Stitcher enabled in 2014. That's what they're aiming at, and you'll be able to get the Stitcher inbuilt into Ford's cars, such as Ford's, GM's, BMW's, Mini's, and a few more. So they're really going great on the mobile in-car market. They're doing really great things there, which is awesome for them. An interesting stat which I was able to get in the previous message was about international listeners. Now, these figures were ballpark figures. Todd Cochran from Raw Voice is going to get me some definite figures, but the basic figures between North American and the rest of the world is anywhere between 65 and 85% North American, and the rest from across the world. Windows and the Microsoft various podcasting directories, etc., were also represented, and they've noticed an increase in podcast creation from outside the US. So podcasting is here to stay. It is definitely not dead. If you haven't heard about it in Australia yet, or you don't hear much about it in Australia apart from me and some other shows, well, hopefully those numbers will increase over time. I've been doing it since 2007, but there's so much more that can be done. To have an event like this in Australia would be absolutely awesome. Even something like a PodCamp would be absolutely awesome, and it'll be interesting to find out how many new listeners from this conference are actually listening to this. All of my sessions are done now, so it's just time to wander around and see who I can see and make connections and whatnot. But for actual sessions, this is the end of the... Yeah, this is the actual end when it comes to sessions for me. Wow, New Media Expo Day 3 is basically over. All of the sessions have been completed. There's a lot of people still in the lounge networking. Some other people have gone to their hotel rooms. Some people have unfortunately left, but there's a lot of people here from traveling from all over the world to be here at New Media Expo. Overall, I've had a great time. I'm glad that I came. It's really the wrong time of year for me, but I was glad that I was here. Hopefully next year it will be at a different time of year, and so I may be able to attend again, which will be excellent. As I've mentioned before, it's great to be in a room in an area full of like-minded people, and it just goes to show me that, yeah, I can be on a global stage and I can learn things and I can enjoy things, and how great it is to be in a room full of like-minded people and people that I've had in my ears before. And yeah, it's really great. It's going to take a bit of time to decompress and process everything, but overall it's been a lot of fun. There's been lots of great conversations, both in person and via Twitter especially, and you know, there's going to be friendships that are continuing on for years in advance, and that's what many people have said, that it's basically like a reunion when they come to events such as New Media Expo. I even had a quick chance to have a very quick chat with Rick Calvert, who is the CEO of New Media Expo. He actually thanked me for coming all the way from Australia, which was great. Great to be able to have just a brief chat with him. You can imagine how many people would want to speak to him on this particular weekend. There's obviously so many people to thank in relation to one of them, and one of them's walking towards me right now. Megan, Podcast Junkie, hello. Hey, how you going? Miss Podcast Junkie, hello. I'm actually recording at the moment.
I thought you might be. Hello.
But,
good to see you. Last saw you in Disneyland 2009.
You did.
Lots been happening. You've been here with New Media Expo doing a lot of stuff there, social media and everything. It's been really, really great.
Thanks. So, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So awesome to see you.
Oh, good to see you too. You know, always good to see you. Thanks for traveling all the way here for us. I know. I'm going to believe that you came just for us.
yeah, totally. Good on you.
All right.
So, yeah, that's cool. So take it easy. I'm just basically wrapping up how everything went. How did everything go for you?
I had a blast. The team is very happy with the results of the whole expo. You know, we had our challenges with the weather, and a lot of our East Coast people couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And we had so many wonderful people that jumped in and made it great, even with all the last-minute change of plans. It all worked out, and we've got a lot of happy attendees. Oh, we're very happy. And my podcast pavilion was wonderful. I had lots of podcasters doing their shows right from the expo floor. Yeah. So I was very, very pleased with that.
Don't want to put you on the spot, but have you got a rough figure of how many people were here and
absolutely
where they were from?
Absolutely no idea. they'll put out a press release at some point. I have no idea on numbers.
Because I heard some accents. Not just American and Canadian accents.
At the podcast pavilion, we had somebody from Canada, but he was doing a French podcast.
Oh, French-Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, French-Canadian, exactly, yeah. So that was awesome. And next year, we will be having the 10th Annual Podcast Awards. So we're excited about that. My head is already buzzing about what can we do to make the 10th really just so extra special.
And as the self-proclaimed podcast junkie, what a place for you to be in, seriously. This is like heaven for you being in this place.
Oh, goodness gracious, yes. I am such a fangirl. I've been saying all weekend, if George Clooney walked past, I probably wouldn't even notice, because I'd be like, hey, there's Eric, you know, there's a podcaster there. I don't care about the big major stars. Unless they're also podcasters, you know. I was real excited because we had Penn Jillette, but mostly because I really fell in love with his work because I listened to his podcast, Penn Sunday School. So I think of him. Yes, I know he's a magician and he's an entertainer of all sorts, but the place where I hear most of his work is his podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm just fangirling all over.
Yeah. Awesome. So, this is a great place to finish New Media Expo and my coverage and everything. So, Megan, thanks.
Great. Wonderful. So good to see you.
See you next time, whenever that may be.
Absolutely.
Next year, hopefully.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Okay.
See ya. Yeah, that was cool. That was perfect.